John Street, Reel 5. So we're in Sardinia, and you said there were American and Italian squadrons.
Yes,
there
we were basically...
Did you have much contact with them?
We socialised a little bit with the Italians, but only a few of us, those of us who liked... Well, they were prepared to do that sort of thing, and I got across and chat to them, and they were quite nice. They were servicemen. I mean, they were like us, you know. Yeah. I mean,
what did you think of the Italians for changing side? And
I married an Italian.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
I found it, of course, that as peacetime came, I'm jumping ahead, as peacetime came, we never found a fascist. They were all anti-fascists. All my relations were all anti-fascists, but they obviously weren't, because some of them had done very well during the war. And I used to get across with them and say, well, if I'd have been a fascist, I'd be proud to say I was a fascist at the time. In Italy, I wouldn't say it perhaps in London, but I said it. And I, you know, I had my views. I mean, they decided that was better than, and I think it was better than what they had. It just went too far. It is one of those unfortunate things with any sort of change of government, usually for the best, but then it goes too far. And but I like the Italians. I can quite see mine. There are two Italians. There's the northern and the south. And the north hate the south, and the south hate the north. And I'm talking about hatred. I mean, they don't like one another at all. I mean, if a northern football team goes down to Naples to play, there's more deaths than what they are down here. I mean, I'm telling you, they are very not patriotic, the word I'm word. But I felt sorry for them being defeated, and I felt that at the time they thought they were... I did speak to some were rather educated ones, and they used to say, well, what else could he do? I mean, the place was full of Germans. I mean, he couldn't very well turn around and say, you know, I'm going to go on the English side. I mean, he had to stick it out, and he paid for it with his life, of course, at Mussolini. Mm. But I found them quite... They're very good pilots, some of them. I haven't got anything in here, but later on I should tell you about where I was on a flying boat base, and I used to fly a lot with them. Oh, they had some beautiful flying boats.
Right. So what about the Americans on this base in Sardinia?
Well, we found the Americans funny. We used to laugh at them, and we thought they were a bit amateurish. They were very... noisy about anything they did, and they had things that we would never have thought of, and we thought it was funny. But I mean, for instance, once I told you we're living in tents at Alghero, and the Americans were in tents up the road, and suddenly there are all these people pouring down the road, all sorts. And it was almost like a cartoon, a comedy, when there was blokes rushing down with soap round their face and things like this. And we kind of said, what's up? What's going on? And they said, there's women on the base, women on the base. So we all said, well, women on the base, women on the base. So we went down as well. And there was this great big aeroplane. I mean, it was war. I mean, we're not peacetime. Great big DC-3. And they've been specially converted. They slide in doors or open the doors, and these great arms came out with a donut machine. And they're all queued up, and you get a donut and a cup of coffee. I speak to a girl, I suppose, because they were scarce. I suppose we as air crew saw more girls than my ground crew never saw any of them, but we occasionally got down to Egypt and places like that. Mm. And that sort of thing. We thought they were so funny, you know, we thought they're wrong. Yeah. You know,
what did you think of their skills as pilots and navigators?
Well, I think we only heard the wrong when they made an awful lot. No, they did. They did. They made an awful lot of messes. Surprising.
Really?
It was surprising. And of course, this last few years, I've done a lot of, tried to do a lot of research on the Italian campaign, and I've had, doing what you're doing in a way, so I don't record it, I've had grown men practically in tears when they talk about their friends they lost. It was through incompetence of our own friends. Mm. I mean, the behaviour of the Americans after the casino, I mean, where they left the Poles completely in the lurch, because he wanted to be on the front page of Time, or wanted to be on the newsreel as being the general that took Rome, and Rome was an undefended city. I mean, we thought that was hilarious. We thought it was stupid. We didn't look up to them. Like, in fact, I think we looked up to the Germans more sometimes than, you know, well, you meet the German prisoner of war and
did you meet many German prisoners of war?
Yes, I did actually. Later on again, yeah. And what I'm talking about now.
Okay. So, how long were you in Sardinia?
We did the rounds, of course. Being the sort of squadron we were, it was best to get our aircraft as near to where they were wanted. So we had a lot of detached flights, and you'd be in headquarters, which was the headquarters up there, and then you could be detached back down to Bone, mm-hmm. but there were still aircraft flying from Gibraltar to Malta, or you could... You could go to Elmas, which was the American base, which was a choice posting. That was a choice posting because you did live a lot better.
That was where?
Elmasfield, E-L-M-A-S, Elmasfield, a big American base. And again, the war was on, and it was the height of the Italian campaign, but it was quite funny in a way because we went down there, and I was a warrant officer now, and there's no warrant officers in the... Well, these warrant officers in the American Air Force are commissioned. I don't know how, because it's two terms that don't mix. But they lived in the officer's mess, so we were told we had to live in the officer's mess. And they used to fly aircraft, which the RAF would never do. They would fly an aircraft down to Egypt and pick up ice cream and fly it back in the tailplane of the aircraft, high level, so it didn't defrost. And chickens and... fresh chickens and fresh eggs from Egypt, you know. They'd go down, you'd take blokes going, you know, nine of them going that the way to fight and one going down that way to get the goodies. The sort of thing that we never came across. And of course, the other thing that I used to laugh a little bit about was that I never saw an entrance show. They never came near me, not the entrance people. And, but in this bit, they were always there. And, you know, men and girls, boys and girls, or men and women, you always kind of get a thing, a fix on some of these film stars. You think, oh, God, I've done well. And I used to like one called Martha Ray. And when I heard Martha Ray was coming on the camp, I thought, well, I'm going to see that. But my ticket, I went to ask for a ticket, and I was told, no, they have come here to entertain the troops. Which again was completely different to us, because
just the British troops.
No, the American troops. And because you're an officer, you're not allowed a ticket. So we had an argument with him whether we're an officer or not. And I eventually got a ticket, and I went to show. And it was Martha Ray. I mean, I don't suppose you've ever heard of Martha Ray. And a girl called Jinx Falkenberg, who was the sister of Jinx Falkenberg, a tennis player. And she was known as a polka dot girl because she was a polka dot bikini girl. They're very long legs. She was a tennis player, but not a star like her brother. And she ended her bit of performance, parading around the stage, by knocking these cotton ball tennis balls into the audience, which contained all sorts of things, like sweets, mine, or a fortnight's R&I down at, you know, Egypt. A car waited for you stateside, perhaps one in every 2,000. Well, we never saw anything like that, and we thought that was out of this world. And of course, to say the food was so much. We were living in, well, good cooks, but I mean, they were using paraffin burners, you know, and if the water wagon didn't come, you got thick custard, you know. But they had. I mean, I was having food I never heard of. Chicken Maryland and pancakes. Our cook couldn't cook pancakes for, you know, 80 men. He'd have to have five pans on the go. You know, things like that. But I found them all right. They were funny. And one wonders if they were in a war. I at the end of the first month, I was a warrant officer, as I said, and we went there as an all NCO crew. And the pilot and myself lived in the officer's mess, and the rest of them, because they were flight sergeants below, lived in the lines with the airmen. And when the first month was up, I got a mess bill for £30. I was only getting £30 a month. That was my complete money. And I got this, and that was before stoppages, you know, and I got this mess bill for £30. So I said, well, I can't pay this, so you'll have to go and see the CO, the station commander. So off we ops to see him. And it was just like a bad B-class film. You know, we were arguing with policemen, you know, with a black policeman with the white helmets on and the nightsticks, you know, and they eventually shouting at us and marching us in. So we had a big argument. We wanted us to take our hats off, and we said, no, we're not taking our hats off. We can't salute him if we take our hats off, you know. No, you can't take it. No, we don't take it. So we, you know, just to get into the industry. And when we got in there, he sat in his seat, combat flying boots on the table, had hat bent, you know, roll off a big cigar chunked in his mouth. And he says, you know, he swore practically every other word. And what's your problem? And I said, well, I said, got two bills here, my pilot and me. I said, $120, I said, that's £30 in those days. I can't pay it, I said, and I don't quite see. I've told you this right in the beginning, that we couldn't afford, we should be living in with your sergeants. And he said, no, you can't even live in there. He said, how much are you going to pay then? I said, well, I guess £30. I get £1 a day. 30 days, £30. And he said, there's Mindry, so-and-so, Lime is, he said. And he tore the bill up. Then we went off, and the next month we got another one. And they go through the same performance again. Same performance, come over, and the same thing. And I said, could you put this on paper or something, you know? But then, of course, we went back and it was all over. But it was funny, you know, it was so funny. You never believed that in between all this, I mean, I was flying over enemy territory, you know. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So what did you see of the enemy in your operational flights?
Well, mainly, as I say, we flew out low level. And fighters do not like aircraft that fly low because they can't get underneath them. So though they saw us and we saw them, we were never attacked by one. But we did have a system of, I told you we searched visibility. But if you got two aircraft, you could double the search. And to get four aircraft, you could double it. So you get four aircraft, one aircraft doing the lead, and another just formating on keeping station. Because every now and again, the mid-upper gunner would swing around and he'd put his sights on you and he could measure exactly with the gun sights that were coming in now, you know, the old ringing beat. He could measure exactly that he was a quarter of a mile from you. And one day this JU-88 came screaming up, and he must have been an amateur, must have been from a training unit, because he made a dive and then suddenly realized that we were only about 200 feet off the water, and he almost kissed the waves as he pulled out. And he was out on the wing about 4 or 3 miles from us, of course, and he fired a couple of bursts at the one on the end. And this bloke, they let go, and of course they had three guns, six 303s and 2.5s. And the hell of bullets went out. It must have scared the life out of him. Because he couldn't get underneath us. He couldn't get, so once he committed his dive, as soon as he pulled up, he was no longer being a shooter because he got fixed guns. Because as he went across the top, well, they must have hit him, because we did get credited with a kill. They found it on the beach up in some place. They said it was, I think they got the number of it, but it was so close. But that's the only time I ever saw. I got fired out a couple of times by their MTBs, because they, sometimes if there was somebody in the water, you wouldn't know whether it was a German or an American or an Englishman down there. And it was just as important to drag a German out of the water as a more important, well, no, not more important, but at least you could get some information out of him. And of course, they were after this bloke and they fired at us, but again, the rain was a bit erratic and we tipped the wing up and he poured a few rounds down and they gave up the ghost and pushed off. And they didn't know, I suppose, whether, I don't think we had a lifeboat underneath that day, and of course we could have been, unless his, our aircraft identification was very good, we could have been an aircraft that was more danger to him than what we were.
So how long were you in Sardinia?
Well, I was on the squadron from then. That was for when I arrived, which was around about May 44, wasn't it? May 44. Mm-hmm. Right up to the end of the war. Right. Except, of course, I went on the South of France invasion.
Oh, right. Tell me about that then.
That was rather an interesting one because I went in with the Americans. I didn't fly in. I just had my appendix out, and I was on no fly-in, but they wanted the squadron to go in. They wanted me to go in because my crew, they had to juggle to get my crew there because there wasn't a spare navigator. So I went in with the Americans. I went over with the Foreign Legion. And
so
I did that.
Where did you muster? Where did you...
We landed about 200 yards left of the torpedo factory in Bertrand Place, which I've been since. That's all I know it so well. I've been there since I played it. But it's completely different. Of course, we went... The beachmaster took us up the beach. But now, of course, there's a great concrete road. Of course, you can't invade France from the south now anymore. There's too many big hotels there.
So you went in and you were following the invaders in, were you?
Yeah, I followed the invasion in, yeah. And
what did you see? What state was it in?
Didn't see very much at all. It was quite a quiet invasion, actually. They were fighting, but they'd withdrawn from the beaches because, of course, the Americans had a lot of firepower when they really opened up, and they'd moved back. They're a bit exposed on the beaches, I think. And... anyhow, I just got in there and I went off down to the headquarters, and they eventually got me up to Marseille, Istri. I don't know how long after the invasion it was, actually. I wouldn't say I was on the South of France invasion as such. I just itched to left with them, you know. As the war went up through Italy, we moved across, our headquarters moved from Sardinia to Naples, and we were stationed at Pomigliano. Again, I went in there quite early. I don't know when it was, though. But we were all, you know, back and forth between then and back to North Africa, to Aloina for a while, and you do about a month here and a month there, and
where was it you were in North Africa?
Sorry?
Where was it you were in North Africa?
Bone and Aloina.
How do you spell that?
B-O-N-E, with a funny thing over the N.
Yeah, and the other one?
Aloina.
It's an A, is it?
Absolutely no. But I ain't got it written down because I can't spell it.
Yeah.
Oh, Elaouina. That was a funny field. It was, I think it must have been an American field. It was pressed PSP planking, and it was like landing on a, well, it was like a Meccano strips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, of course, we occasionally were allowed, if we were very good, to go to Malta. Where we had a small detachment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what? Malta had been under siege for so long. You must have heard a lot about it.
There were very few Americans in Malta, mainly British Navy, full of British Navy, mm-hmm. Because they were no longer strategic. They weren't being bombed anymore. They moved well up. I liked Malta. It was a nice place to go. You got a bed, a proper bed, and proper food, and decent drink, because we were a bit short of the, you know, we used to get one pint of beer, one bottle of beer a month sometimes, you know. And even water, it was a luxury to have a shower or a bath, because we were always following the army. We were losing, when we moved in, perhaps the water unit would go, and we'd be left with just water bowsers. And, you know, well into the, almost to the end of the war, we were still four of us in the tent sharing one bucket of water for a day, you know. Yeah.
Not much, really.
Not much, really. Surprising. And as I say, a place like, they were still tented accommodation, you see. Malta was solid buildings.
Did the Maltese, or did you talk to anyone who was there during the siege?
Oh, yes. I was very interested in Malta. And they were very proud. They were prouder then than what they are now. And they were very British. They were, they stayed British, but the Maltese, I think they wanted independence. But I think they were quite proud that they got the Victoria Cross, or George Cross.
What did they tell you about the siege?
Well, only it was blooming awful. It was practically solid bombardment in one way or the other. Food was very short. I mean, it lived on fish, which was still, the fishermen were obviously still going out and coming in. Shortages, of course, and I never actually got to, I was never there really long enough to get from the feet under the table anywhere, but some of our fellows did. They started to run courses there, and you could go down for a course, especially the ground crew NCOs. You go down, although I was commissioned by now, I should think, but they used to, if they picked up a family, they used to take stuff in. From perhaps they managed to divert to North Africa. It was funny in a way, because you take a girl a pound of Brussels sprouts, and it's better than taking her a bunch of flowers. They were badly off from me. I couldn't understand that. They never used to be short of meat, and yet there's nothing on the island. I don't know whether there was a bit of a black market trade between Sicily and Malta, even during, I don't know. I've thought about it, and nobody ever mentions it. But they never seem to be short of steak. I mean, it's a lovely steak. And, of course, the fish was out of this world. And they seem to have an awful lot of wine, seeing it's only a little island.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think there was a bit of a black market. I think there was the brigands were still kind of working.
So you stayed moving about between these places to the end of the war, did you?
Yeah. And as I say, I think our crew were quite respected, and we were used for quite a lot of things we were used for. I mean, I could take you now to another navigator, and he never did. He was just a squadron navigator. But we, as I say, before I was commissioned and after I was... Well, the reason I was commissioned was because of something we did. Because I almost got a field commission. I didn't go through the usual performances. I was more or less commissioned.
How did that come about then? Because of something...
Well, it was 44. The war had vanished from North Africa. And also, of course, they were well up. They were a year up into Italy. And we'd been sent down to either Aloina, I can't remember if it was Aloina or Bone, basically for a rest, because we'd been doing a lot of flying. And suddenly there was a panic call that there was a boat that was taking people from Cyprus, Sicily to Malta, or not sure which way they were going. There was a rest and leave camp either in Malta or in Sicily, And they did an experiment again, some girls there, and they sent them on a boat. And it appears the boat ran into difficulty, and the master of the boat put the girls overboard, and they got lost. They lost them.
In the sea?
In the sea, yeah. Oh, they were in a boat. The boat drifted away from the other boat. The weather was atrocious weather. And they called forth. The mortar squadron were all US or something, so they had to call. They called us out, and they didn't think we could go. And the Met people said we shouldn't go, but we did go, and we went through about four very severe thunderstorms, and we lost all the rigging off the back of the aircraft at one time. And we landed, and we weren't used actually, because as we landed, the squadron that were based there put an aircraft up and found them. And it appears that the AOC in Malta was so impressed by the fact we got there that he paid a visit to the squadron after it was all over and had us up and congratulated me and the pilot. And then just after that, the CO said that to me and the pilot, the old man said, "You've got to be commissioned." And the pilot said, "Oh, I don't particularly want to be." Quite happy. So I said, "Well, I do," because I'd made up my mind then I wanted to stay in the Air Force. I think peace was, you could see peace coming. That alarm was going to take. And a lot of us felt, I think, that the war wouldn't stop. We thought we might stop fighting the Germans and start fighting the Russians. But I thought that was my future, was in the Air Force.
So you got
I got commissioned, and I was lucky because I was a WO. I went straight to flying officer rank. And from then I stayed with the same crew. I just moved up the road in step two and attended instead of four and attended. But we did get a lot of perks. Our crew, we were very, very lucky, I think, in a way. I went to Egypt two or three times. To fetch aircraft back, which some other people never again knew the plan. I mean, they weren't even asked if they wanted to go. I mean,
it was a good place to visit, was it?
Egypt was quite, yeah, because the war never touched them, of course. I mean, it wasn't very far from it, was they?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a young man, and it was very nice there because there were a lot of WACs there, a lot of ATC girls, ATS girls, or. Always been into shows. I think they liked seeing us as much as we liked seeing them.
Yeah,
I never made any lasting relationships, it's true, but I did enjoy going down there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I did like my belly. I liked my food.
Yeah.
And it was nice to get down and sit on a table. And I got used to having napkins now if I...
John Street, end of Reel 5. John Street, Reel 6. So where were you on VE Day?
Well, I was flying, funnily enough, from Pomigliano, which is just outside of Naples.